going to be talking about Python, and in particular, web programming with Python, which is one of the topics that CS50 covers in the latter half of the class. And this is quite popular amongst AP students in particular for their Create projects, for example, where building a web application is actually relatively easy in Python. And in this seminar, we'll talk a little bit about how that works. And so in CS50, in order to build web applications in Python, we use a framework called Flask. Flask is one of many popular Python frameworks used for kind of building web applications quickly. Flask, as a framework, took care of writing a lot of the code that's a little bit uninteresting when it comes to developing mobile application or web applications, and lets students really focus on the interesting part of building web applications, which is like what shows up on the screen when you go to a particular web address, for instance. And so I'll show you a quick demonstration of what a web application in Flask looks like and what potential it brings. And definitely at any point, if you have questions, or when you have questions, definitely stop me and ask, and happy to talk about them as well. But effectively, all you need to begin working on a Flask application is a file in Python called application.py. And inside of application.py, at minimum need to be these lines. And all this code is available on CS50's website because there are many examples of Flask programs that are written. But first, we import the Flask module because we'll be using Flask in order to create a web application. And then what web applications in Flask are composed of is they're composed of a number of routes. In effect, what that means is that we create a route using this syntax where we have app.route slash, meaning when you go to the web address slash, in other words, you didn't type anything into the web address, Flask links that route with a particular function. So I'll write it all out, and then you'll see how it works, and then it'll make more sense. But I can define a function. Generically, we'll call it index. And the index function may, for instance, return hello, just the word hello. And so that in itself is already a web application in Flask. And what this web application is going to do is that when I go to my website, when I just go to slash as my web address, it's going to just display hello to the screen. Yep. Yep, so Python is just the programming language that this is all written in. And Flask is a kind of a library of code that someone else wrote in Python to make it easy to use Python in order to build web applications.
Can you give us the link for the Flask?
Yep. If you go to Flask Python. Yes, yes. Flask is available to anyone who wants to, not just in CS50, but CS50 happens to use Flask. This right here is the URL for Flask, if you want to look at that. Oops.
And is it an online? They don't have to download anything.
They will need to install the Flask framework. But if they're using CS50 IDE, that online environment in which students are generally writing their code for CS50, we've already installed Flask there, so they won't need to install anything new. Yeah. Yeah, already built into the IDE. Students are welcome to, if they want to do programming outside of the IDE, they're welcome to download Flask separately and use it there as well. But it is built into the IDE. Yeah?
So where are you right now?
I'm right now just editing a text file on my computer. But you could just as easily be editing a file in CS50 IDE, for instance. And then all I have to do now is the command to start up the web server is flask space run. And again, all this information is in the like lecture notes for the lecture that is on Flask and Python. But when I type flask run, what I get back, sorry, one moment. When I type flask run, what I get back is this URL. And if I take this URL and copy it and paste it into my web browser, what I get back is a web page that just displays the word hello. And so I'll show you the code for that again. And effectively, lines 5, 6, and 7 here are the only ones that are important. Line 5 says, when the user goes to my website and just types in slash into the URL, i.e. nothing, then the index function on line 6 is the one that is going to run. And what does the index function do? That's on line 7. All it's going to do is it's going to display hello. And so I could add another route to my program, for instance. I could say app route, if I go to not just slash, but like slash by, then maybe I have another function called by that runs, and that is going to return goodbye, for instance. So now I have two routes in my program, a slash and a slash by. And now, if I restart my web server and refresh this page is still going to display hello, because my normal website, when I just went to slash, displays the word hello. But now if I go to my website and in my URL type slash by, for instance, then the web page displays goodbye. So I've created a web application that has two different pages, one that says hello and one that says goodbye, all using fairly minimal code just here. Lines 5, 6, and 7 define that first route, just slash, that displays hello, for instance. Lines 9, 10, and 11 define that other function, by, which displays the word goodbye to the screen when I go to the slash by route of my website. Questions about that? What questions do we have? Oh, that's fine. Yeah, so that's just meaning what's happening there is just that your website isn't running like on the internet for anyone to see. But when you're just working on your website writing code, you'll be running the website locally, so to speak, meaning that you're the only one who can look at that. It'll also be kind of the same thing. So if you're in CS50 IDE right now and you see that output and you click on that link, and go and click like open, you should get the same thing. And in fact, I can demonstrate that right now as well. May as well just go into the IDE. Other questions while this is loading?
It generates an IP address, and then you're using the IP address to go look at it.
Exactly, yeah. So if I, in this file, just, or, nope, this is all just running locally on my computer. So nobody else would be able to get access to this, correct? So I run flask run in CS50 IDE. And what I get back is this URL, which is where my website is running. And if I click on that and then click open, then what happens is in a new page, I see my hello website. And if I go to that same website and type like slash by, for example, I get the goodbye page. And so that's all just with this code in CS50 IDE. Other questions about that so far? Yep, so there are already two functions here. Index and by are two different functions for two different routes. But the kind of rule is that underneath any one of these routes, there must be one function. And that route gets associated with that function immediately underneath it. And those functions could themselves call other functions, certainly. But each route just needs to be associated with the one, meaning this is the function that will run when some user goes to the slash by route, for example. Other questions? OK, so kind of the interesting thing here is that this, what I'm returning, isn't just text, but it's HTML, which means that if students know a little bit about using HTML and how to make their websites look nice using HTML, they're welcome to kind of add that stuff into their code as well. So for example, a simple HTML tag is using angle brackets and the letter B to mean bold, meaning turn this text bold. So if I wanted to, instead of just returning the word goodbye here, I could instead return less than B greater than for start bold text, and then slash B for end bold text. This syntax isn't Python. It's just HTML code for take this text and make it bold. And so what that means is that now, when I refresh this page, the slash by route, goodbye normally appeared in plain text. But when I refresh it, now goodbye is bold. So using HTML, you can create effectively any website you want using this same kind of syntax of returning some HTML text that then gets displayed to the user.
So then you can go on to CSS too?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you wanted to, you could add whatever CSS tags you wanted to and style the website and make it as pretty as you like. Of course, it'll start getting a little bit complicated that all, like for instance, what I probably want to be doing at some point is I want to be displaying a full file, like an HTML file. And an HTML file looks something like this. It'll usually have like a title and a body that may have some text in it. But it would be pretty annoying if I had to include this entire HTML text inside of that like return line inside of Python. It would just get kind of messy that I'm mixing Python and HTML together. And so Flask has a nice convention for this. If I create a folder inside of my application folder called templates, and then I take this HTML file and I save it inside that templates folder. So I'll go ahead and save that and put it inside templates, and I'll call it index.html just by convention. Now inside of application.py, I can, in addition to importing just Flask, I can import this special render template function. And what the render template function allows me to do is instead of just returning the word hello, I can instead, right here, return not a word, but I can return a specific template. And in this case, say I want to return, say, index.html, because that's the name of the HTML file that I created inside of my templates folder. Now, when I refresh this page and I go to just the slash route with no by, I get hello there displayed in a headline font. And if you look up here to the title bar, it's also got a title for this web page, which is just hello. And it's got all that because in my IDE, in my index.html file, I define, OK, the title of this website is going to be hello. And inside of the body of the website will be a big headline that says hello there. And so this is kind of one of the early things that we try to teach in Flask, which is the idea that we don't want to just combine everything together in one file. We want to separate things out. Take our Python code that does kind of the logic of our website and make that one file. But then our template code, our HTML files that determine what the user sees, that should be in a different file altogether. So things can be kept separate and a little more organized in that fashion. What questions do we have so far? Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Do you have to use the word templates for that folder?
Yeah, it's a Flask convention that that folder has to be called templates. Most of the files you can name most whatever you want, but the templates folder needs to be called templates. Kareem?
Can you please turn on the presentation mode?
It's on. There we go.
And given that this is also a section about how to teach sections, I just want to point out now that every time a concept has been introduced, Brian has stopped and asked what questions you guys have. And that's a good practice, as Doug mentioned. So just pointing it out.
So other things that, so with HTML files normally, you kind of write your HTML file, and whatever is in that HTML file, that's what gets displayed every time a user goes to the website, for instance. But Flask, because it lets you create a web server, gives you a little more flexibility over being able to kind of customize what your web page is depending on what the user does. For instance, maybe I want to, here's an example. I'll add another route to my website. But instead of specifying that it's going to be slash or like slash by or something, I'm going to say it's going to be some arbitrary string that maybe represents some person's name. And I'll call this function hello. This is the function that is associated with that route that I just created. And all this route is going to do is it's going to return this route will take as an argument a name that's passed in via the URL. And you'll see what this means in a moment. And so now when I return, I'm going to return hello plus the name plus exclamation point. And so now, for instance, if I go to my website and I go to slash Christian, for example, Christian was not a route that I defined in my website, but I defined a route that just took some arbitrary string that could be anything. And now when I press return, unexpected EOF.
This is encouraging a culture of error, that making errors is OK.
Thank you, Christian. And all right, unexpected EOF while parsing. Oh, I forgot to save the file. So lessons learned, save your files before you try. But now, when I go to the mywebsite/Christian route, I see the text, hello, Christian. And this could be any name that I wanted to arbitrarily. I could say /Kareem, and it'll say hello, Kareem. And any name is going to display a different name on that website because I've built a dynamic website, a website that's going to change depending on what the user does. Correct. Yeah, every function in Python just needs to have a different name. And so generally, it's convention in Python actually to name the function associated with the name of what the route is. So this one.
I'm just not sure how familiar most of us are with decorators.
Yeah, so the decorator syntax is how this actually works. So if you're more familiar with Python, what's really going on here is that the at app.route is taking the function, and it is wrapping the function inside of other code that says, like, when a user goes to the web server and types in this route, here is what should actually happen. But for students in the class, we don't actually teach how those decorators work. We just say, this is the syntax app.route. And certainly, if students want to know more and they ask about it, we'll go in and explain how that all works. But for the purposes of just getting started and learning to build a web application from scratch, it's not strictly important to know exactly how those decorators work.
It is important to know
the name of the function. Yes, that is true. And I imagine Flask would probably complain if I tried to give two functions the same name. We'll give it a try. If I name two functions index, is something bad going to happen? We'll find out. If I go to /by. Oh, view function mapping is overwriting an existing endpoint index. So yeah, they do give me an error if I try to give two functions the same name. And incidentally, this might be a particularly cryptic error if I didn't know that I accidentally had named two functions the same name. But one of the tools that we'll talk about later today, Help50, is designed to kind of address this issue, to take cryptic error messages and try to interpret them for the student. And we'll do a demonstration of Help50 shortly after this session. And so you'll get to see that as well. But yes, the functions do need to have different names. That is true. But in addition to just being able to return text that contains a variable, it would be nice if my HTML file, for instance, this index.html file, were able to do the same thing. We'd be able to, in addition, instead of just displaying the same content every time, hello there, it would be nice if this HTML file could say, like, hello, Christian, or hello, Kareem, or hello to anyone I want. And that's what we'll try and do next. Normally, HTML wouldn't be able to support that kind of thing. But because of Flask, we can dynamically create these HTML files to display whatever content we want. So for instance, instead of hello there, the syntax in Flask, or more specifically Jinja, which is the templating language, is to use double curly braces in the HTML to indicate I'm going to put a variable here. And we'll call this variable person, for whatever reason. So person is going to be the person who I'm saying hello to. And then in application.py, my Flask application written in Python, instead of returning hello name, I'm going to instead return the template. Render template, remember, takes a template file located in templates directory and displays that HTML template, index.html. But index.html is an HTML file that requires a variable called person. And so inside of application.py, I'm going to say, OK, we'll take the person variable and set that equal to name, because name is the name that got passed into this route. So I get rid of that return. But now if I go to my website /Christian, I get a website that says Hello Christian. And if I look at the page source of this website, it looks exactly the same as the index.html file that I created. But notice that instead of curly brace, person, it replaced that with the name Christian, because when Flask called the render template function, it takes any of those variables that I've given names to and plugs them into the HTML file wherever. And that's what allows me to display something like Hello Christian. What questions do we have about this? Yep, we can go back to the code. So this is the Python code in order to make this work. This is that specific function. So line 13 says, this is what's going to happen whenever someone goes to slash and then some string, which could be any string, but we'll call it name for now. And line 14 says, when someone goes to that URL, call this hello function, passing in the name as that argument. And then line 15 says, OK, here's what happens when someone goes to that hello function. We're going to render the template index.html, which is that file located in my templates directory, passing in the variable name, which is defined here, and we're going to call it person. And as a result of this in my HTML file, this is the code there. So inside the body of my HTML file, I've said, OK, in a headline, so H1 is HTML syntax for make a big headline here. There's H1 for big headlines, H2 for like slightly smaller headlines, all the way down to H6. And between the H1 tags, we're going to say hello, and then double curly braces to indicate a variable is going to go here. It's a placeholder. We're going to insert person there. And so therefore, the render template function passes in Christian as my name, stores it in a variable called person. And then when it's rendering this HTML template, it plugs in the name Christian in place of that placeholder where it says person. Yeah?
I have a question. I am getting an error saying that render template is not defined.
On the first line of your application.py file, be sure that you have import both Flask and render template. So any Flask function you need, you're going to end up importing. So big Flask files end up having like a lot of these imports at the top line. Yeah. Yep.
And I assume I can pass in dictionary instead of
you can absolutely you yes, you can pass in dictionaries as well.
Like star star and then name.
Yeah, cuz that will expand into the keyword arguments. Yep.
Okay, so with operating all this code, do you end up with some type of performance issues? Cuz you're in Python, you're in Flask. That's a lot of code that the CPU is working on.
So something like this actually is relatively low overhead. Flask is what's called like a micro framework, or they advertise themselves as a micro framework, meaning Flask is not a lot of code that's happening anytime that a website loads. It's pretty minimal code that just plugs in the variables and displays them. Yes, that's not going to be nearly as fast as just displaying an HTML web page. But for the sake of creating a dynamic web page that changes depending upon what the user is doing and like what the user puts into the URL, for instance, it's a relatively small price to pay, actually. There are other frameworks out there. Another popular one is called Django. It's another Python-based web framework. Django is a much heavier framework, so to speak, meaning it's got a lot more code behind it, and as a result is potentially slightly slower in some cases because more is going on there. But Flask ends up being pretty fast. Other questions that we have about any of this so far? Yeah?
How many arguments do you get passed to render template?
Render template can pass in, theoretically, as many functions, as many arguments as it would like to. The first argument to render template needs to be the name of some HTML file that I actually want to render that's inside of that templates folder. But after that, I can just keep adding argument after argument after argument that are just more information that I want my HTML file to know about. And so that allows any of that to happen.
And that's the syntax with no spaces between the equal sign and the.
Yep. Convention is to not use spaces. You could put spaces there. But generally, in Python, when we're just passing in named arguments in a function, it's usually not conventional to put spaces. But you could. Mm-hmm. If you had a lot of these arguments, if I had more like foo equals bar, baz equals foo, and more stuff, sometimes you'll see that like these will go onto another line or something. And so that's totally fine as well. But for something this short, generally fine just to kind of keep it all together. Other questions about anything that's going on so far? Okay, fantastic. As was alluded to, it's not just text that you could theoretically pass in to a particular route. Let's create another file. I'll call it list.html. And inside of list.html, I'll kind of copy the code from index.html first, just for now. And maybe I want to display a list of items. And in HTML, the way you display a list of items is using UL for unordered list, and then LI for list item. So this could be hello, goodbye, and this is CS50. And so this is syntax in HTML for just creating a simple list. It's going to be an unordered list, UL, with three items in it, defined on lines 7, 8, and 9. And then inside of application.py, I'll create a new route just called slash list. And slash list will render the template list.html. So all I've done so far is create one new route on my web application called slash list. This is going to need to change. We'll call it show list is the name of this function. But it could be called anything. And it's going to return the template list.html. And right now, list.html just displays a list of three items. So if I go to my website and go to slash list, what I see is bye. Uh-oh. That's an error we've seen before. I probably didn't. Did I not save this? Save it again. OK. Second time I've made that mistake today. Culture of error. And all right, so when I go to slash list, what I end up seeing is that unordered list of those three items. But of course, it would be nice if it weren't just the same three items every time, and if my Python code could decide for itself what items to display in the list. And so for instance, I could do something like this. I'll create a variable called names, and I'll make names a list. Lists are Python's equivalent of like arrays in C. And maybe Christian will be one name, and Kareem will be another name, and Chad will be a third name. So I have this list of names. And then when I render the list.html template, I will pass in as a variable called people, that list of names. And for good measure, these two names of variables, names meaning the variable name in Python, and people meaning the variable name that HTML will care about, they could be the same thing. But for the purpose of making it clear what's what for now, I've kept them as separate. But they could theoretically be the same name. But what I've done here is I've created a list of names, called it names, so names is a list. And I'm passing that into my list.html template as a variable called people. And so now, inside of list, instead of these static list items that are just always going to be the same thing, I can, using syntax like this, and there's examples of this on the CS50 website, so you don't need to memorize exactly what it looks like. But the general gist of it is that I can now do logic inside of my HTML. I can create loops, for instance, inside of HTML, where normally HTML is just display the content that is statically written into the HTML code. So I could say, for each person in my list of people, and end my for loop there, like that. That's the Jinja syntax for a for loop. We'll display a list item that says hello, and then the name of the person. And so this line here should seem reasonably familiar, because it's the same thing I did in my hello program. All I'm doing is creating a list item, and inside of it saying hello, and then in that double curly braces saying, stick a person's name in here. And I'm getting my person from this loop that goes through each one of the people and displays for each person in that list of people hello to that person's name. So I'll show you what this looks like, and then I'll show you the code again if you want to take a closer look at it and ask questions. But now if I go to slash list and press return, if all goes well, what I get is this. We're going to get a list of hello Christian, hello Kareem, hello Chad, because it looped over that list of three names, Christian, Kareem, Chad, and for each one created a list item inside of which contained hello, followed by the name of the person that I wanted to say hello to. So that's the output. I'll show you the code one more time, and then we'll field some questions. Yep, so Python indexes as arrays, same way as C. 0 is the first element, 1 is the second element, and so on and so forth. Yep. So this was the syntax again. UL is just HTML for start a new line here. Anything that is white in this image, with the exception of the hello title at the top, is like the Jinja syntax. Jinja is just the name of a templating language that helps to format HTML in a dynamic way that's letting me do things like inserting variables and creating loops. And so what I'm doing is inside of these UL tags that define an unordered list, I am looping through the people, and for each one, displaying an li, a list item, that displays hello to the person's name. And so you can see the applications of this. In CS50, one of our assignments that many students consider to be one of the most fun assignments is CS50 Finance, which David talked about a little bit more this morning, where the idea behind CS50 Finance is that you create a website that simulates stock trading, where you can buy stocks and sell stocks using virtual currency. Every user is given like $10,000 of fake money to start off with. And if we take a look at what that looks like, it's at like finance.cs50.net. If you'd like to play around with it yourself, I can log into it. And inside of that, oh, I guess I need to register for the website first. And someone already took the username test. OK. Test 28. Hopefully no one's taken that. OK, I'm registered for the site. And now I can go and buy shares of stock. I can buy like 2 shares of Google stock. And I can go buy like 3 shares of Netflix stock. And now what we see is that we have like this list of stock symbols and names and prices. But of course, when the student has to create this HTML file, they didn't know I was going to buy 2 shares of Google and 3 shares of Netflix. And so in order to build this, the code is really very similar to what we just saw with that looping and displaying list elements. It's just a loop, except instead of looping over names like Christian, Kareem, Chad, I'm looping over the stocks that I own, Google, Netflix. And instead of displaying a list item for each name, the student just displays a row and a table for each one of those stock shares and is able to display, here's the symbol of the stock, here's the name, and so on and so forth. Obviously, a little more complicated than what I was just demonstrating with the list of names, but fundamentally, really the same idea. It's just looping through some list of items and creating HTML out of that. And that's kind of where the fun of this assignment comes in. It's that you define what the website kind of looks like, but then what you actually see when you go to the website is dependent upon which stocks the user bought and how much they were worth when the user decided to buy them. Questions about anything we've seen so far? Thank you. If things don't make sense, definitely stop me. Otherwise, I'll just keep going and talking about Flask and Python and how all that works.
I do want to jump into and just point out how valuable it is to go over how to build something and then relate it to an example, especially an example that they'll see in a problem set. So tying it back with an example is always a great practice.
Another thing that I like to do in my sections when I start to introduce this stuff is to introduce like the common mistakes that people are going to run into and to show them what the error messages look like. Because for some reason, error messages, especially in Flask, but really everywhere, error messages are terrible to try to understand. They just very often don't make sense and are difficult when you're just starting out learning a new technology to figure out why the code won't work and why you're getting the error messages that you are. So for instance, if I try and go to just slash right now, just no arguments, and press return, I get hello with a space. OK, that's interesting. Why is there hello space exclamation point? Where did that come from? Anyone know? Yeah, go for it.
Just guessing, but maybe it passed in as just a null string?
Yeah, because the idea is that
you hinted before that you have to pass in a variable.
Yeah. So inside index.html, which is what's rendered, I'm displaying hello person. But in this case, in this route, the route where I go nowhere, I render index.html, but I never passed in person. So person doesn't exist. And so Flask, or Jinja rather, the templating language, doesn't have any person name to put there, and so it displays nothing. And so I get hello, and I get this space, but this whole thing, this curly brace person, that just went away because there was no person to display there.
So you can ignore variables then. If you set it up properly, you can use something.
Yeah, you could. And in fact, one common syntax is to do something like this. I'm going to say if person, meaning if there is a person, then display the person's name. Else, we'll display the word there, and we'll end if there. So this is going to look, this is a little complicated, but we'll see what it looks like. Now, when I go to slash Christian, I see hello Christian. And when I go to slash Doug, I see hello Doug. But when I go to just slash, I see hello there, no name. And here's the code that made that work. I say hello, and the code effectively what it's saying is, if there exists a person, if the person variable name exists, then yeah, in these double curly braces, display the person's name. Else, meaning the person didn't exist, there was no variable called person, just display the word there instead of a name, and then end if. And so the logic there means that if I go to slash some name, what I get is a page that displays hello to that person. But if I just go to slash without specifying a person's name, what I get is just hello there. And so that adds for even more functionality and flexibility in how the page gets rendered. And it just hints at the amount of complexity that you could theoretically add if you wanted to into a simple HTML page like this. We've already seen how you can add conditions, ifs and elses. We've seen that you can add loops in order to loop through structures. We've seen variables. And so all of that is possible. There's even the notion of functions in this templating language. So notice that when I went to like slash Christian, I see hello Christian. But like my English teacher would be pretty mad at me because I didn't capitalize the name Christian. And Flask and Jinja, there moreover, has the notion of take variables and pass them through functions. For instance, there's a built-in function called capitalize. And so if I say person straight line capitalize, that's saying run it through what's really called a filter in Jinja that filters the name person and capitalizes it, such that now when I go to slash Christian, I see hello Christian capital. And if I go to slash Doug, I see hello Doug with a capital first letter. So a lot of potential complexity that can be added into these Flask applications, even with relatively minimal code. This is all happening on just one, hopefully not too complicated, line of code that's just defining what to do with this variable called person. Yeah? Jinja, yeah. So here we divide our sections into like less comfortable, more comfortable, somewhere in between based on people's comfort levels. And depending on those comfort levels, that sort of determines how much of the technical detail that we get into about what's happening here. In some of the less comfortable sections, for example, they might just say, when you're using Flask and you want to have an if condition, you use curly brace percent sign. And that's how you create an if condition. You do curly brace percent sign, if, and then some text. And you can say that that's the way it is. In some of our more comfortable sections, people will ask, oh, well, why is it the case that we have curly brace percent sign? And the explanation for that is just that in this HTML file, Python doesn't really exist in the sense that our Python file is this file, the one that ended with .py. It's a Python file. And Flask is a Python framework. It's a framework written in Python that helps you build web applications in Python. But in order to modify the HTML file, which is where the view appears, what the user is going to see when they go to your website, Python can't really interact with it because Python is a programming language that can't exist inside of an HTML file. But Jinja is the name of a templating language that can interact with HTML. And so Flask and Jinja are very much related, and they're basically used together. And for the most part, students don't need to worry about what's Flask and what's Jinja. But if you are curious, the curly brace percent sign is Jinja syntax for here's how you define an if statement inside of an HTML file, for example. Right. Flask is only a library for Python in order to create web-based applications. When you're just, for example, if you're just trying to write a script that prints a Mario pyramid, for instance, there's no need for Flask. Flask is really only used to help facilitate the process of building a website, because otherwise, people really wouldn't have much of an idea of like where do you even start if you're trying to write an entire website that handles what URL you go to in the web browser and what to display. Flask tries to simplify some of that by creating some additional syntax that you learn that helps to generate pages like this quickly, but certainly not necessary if you're not doing web-based programming. No problem. Yeah? Yeah.
But in this particular case, it would have been better to just check for person in the Python and pass it in, right?
Yeah. So I could have achieved that. That's actually a great point. I could have achieved the same effect if I had just said, like, person equals there or something like that in my index, like if there was no person, and just passed in the word there as my variable. So, yeah, exactly. So there's, in fact, a lot of, I don't know why my dictionary keeps opening up, a lot of potential for talking about what code belongs where if you want to get into that discussion of what belongs in the HTML and Jinja syntax and what really belongs in the Python code with Flask. It introduces the idea that there are so many different ways to solve the problem. You could have achieved this simple thing of just saying hello in at least two different ways, probably more if we kept thinking about it. But it definitely allows for that kind of discussion. J-I-N-J-A. And if you go to all of the examples that I'm talking about can basically be found on Flask, on the Flask website. If you type Flask Python, you'll get to this website. This is what it looks like. And like here's their first example, which is almost exactly the same as the example that we just went through. It defines a particular route, the function that runs when you go to that route, and then the HTML text that is displayed as a result. So all that information is on the Flask website. And if you go to docs for documentation, you can find an explanation of kind of everything that exists there. And it is open source, yep. And so what's a good example? Jekyll also uses Jinja as its templating language, yeah. So Jinja, if you're curious about the more technical details, Jinja is just the templating part. It's what allows us to substitute things into the HTML. And that existed before Flask existed. And what Flask did is Flask said, OK, we want to write a framework that lets you easily build web applications in Python. And since Jinja already existed, there was no need to reinvent the wheel in terms of how do you plug things into an HTML file. Flask just decided to use Jinja as the way to plug variables into the HTML file. But other technologies use Jinja too, including Jekyll as one of them. Other questions? These are great questions. Yeah? Yeah, it's a way to not just interact with an HTML document, but dynamically create HTML documents so that it's an HTML document that normally would just display the same thing every time the user goes to the website can display something different depending on variables or depending on loops and conditions. It lets you add logic into your HTML page.
Yep.
The names, so inside of application.py, this is the function you're talking about?
This is like an interactive array. How would you like when they are writing your website, they are writing something?
Oh, sure, like if you want to have the have them type something into the website?
Type after.
Great. Yep. Okay. So I'll show a simple example of what that might look like. I'll create a new file. I'll call it form.html. And what form.html will do is it will, instead of displaying a headline, I will display an HTML form. And right now I'm writing HTML syntax. And I will have my, action be slash submit. So action just means what should I do when I submit the form. And what I'm saying is go to the slash submit route. And inside my form, I'll create an input field that is a text field. And it will be named name. And then I'll have a button that submits. And let's see if this works. I'll show you the code in a moment, assuming this. Oh. And then in application.py, instead of returning index.html, I'll render this new form.html file. And so this page now displays a simple form. It's got a place for me to type some input in. So I could type in a name, and then I could click the submit button. And so here's the code that created that. Was form.html. I create a form using form tags. I say that the action is what happens when I submit the form. We haven't gotten to that part yet. But these two lines, 7 and 8, define what's in the form. The first thing that's in the form is an input field. Type is text, meaning you can type in text here. And I just give it a name so that I can reference it later. I call it name for now. And then finally, I have a button that says submit. And its role is to submit the form for me. Yeah, JavaScript. You could do this in JavaScript too. Here at CS50, we generally introduce Python and Flask first, just to show here's what the basics of creating a web page is like. And we introduce JavaScript a little bit later to say here's how you can make your websites a little more dynamic and a little more interactive, just so we introduce things in stages. But definitely, you could do this with JavaScript too. Oh.
Your folder names. And then when they are doing that activity, if you could record what they are like, writing, like if they are like entering values and trying to sort something in your, and then if you keep them in an array and then see what the user is doing.
Oh, you want to like track that information?
Yeah, like you did like string name Christian and then you did like Kareem. You know, when you do that, like every time slash and you
Yeah, so I will. The array would stop existing at the end of a function call. But sorry, I misunderstood your question. I can show you what that would be like. Theoretically, I could create a file. I'll call the file. And I'll get back to the form in a moment. Sorry, I know I switched context here. I misunderstood the question. I'll call this file like log.txt for just keeping track of a log. And inside of this hello function, the first thing I'll do before I render the template is I can add any arbitrary Python code that I want, meaning that I can say, OK, let's open up that log.txt file and A for append to it. And don't worry about the exact Python syntax. It's just a demonstration. And then I'm going to write to this file that name and then close the file. And so assuming this all works, we'll give it a shot. If I go to slash Christian, I see hello Christian. If I then go to slash David, it says hello David. If I then go to slash Haley, it says hello Haley. But each time this function here is the function that's getting run. So if I now open up this log.txt file, Christian, David, Haley, there's no new lines. But we can fix that bug. I can add a backslash n for add a new line there. And now I'll clear out my log file, save that, and close it. And so now if I go to slash Davy, it says hello, Davy. I go to slash Sean, it says hello, Sean. I go to slash Annie, it says hello, Annie. And then in my log.txt file, I see Davy, Sean, Annie, because each time that function is getting called. And what this function is doing is it's just writing the name to this log file that I created. So certainly something you could do. Questions about that? That, I guess, is a great example of how you can add whatever arbitrary Python code that you want to this content of the website. OK. We'll go back to the form example, because that's kind of interesting too. Here was that form. And when I submit the form, it's going to take me to the slash submit route. So what I'm going to need to do now is the slash submit route doesn't exist yet. So out of curiosity, any idea what's going to happen if I type in like my name and I click the submit button? Guesses? Well, I haven't clicked it yet. But when I do click it, any thoughts? We'll try it. Hello, submit. Why did it do that? Let's go back to the code. Reload. Oh, that log file actually gives an interesting hint as to what might be going on here. But let's go to the form file. This is the form. I submitted that form. Why is it that when I typed my name and submitted the form, it got hello submit? Yeah.
Well, you have that string name thing as a route that will pick up when you type in anything. So it's going to go to submit.
Yeah, exactly. So my form, when I submit it, I'm saying submit this form to the slash submit route of my website. I haven't created a slash submit route on my website, but I did create a slash any arbitrary string, like slash Christian took me to hello Christian, slash Doug took me to hello Doug. So if this form takes me to slash submit, it's going to display hello submit, because submit is the name of the route. And so that was an interesting bug to try and decode. But now, let's try and fix the problem. Let's add a route called submit, and we'll call it the function will also be called submit. And what I ultimately want to do is I want to still render this index.html file, but the person, I need to get at their name. And so in order to do that, I need to take advantage of another part of Flask called the request object. And the exact syntax for this, and I'll let you copy it in a moment, is going to be I'm going to set this variable name to be request.args. Meaning the arguments to the request, dot get name. Name was this name item here came from this name in my form. And I'll show you all this again in a moment after I check to make sure it works. And so now if I go to slash, expected an indent block. I didn't save my file again. Now if I go here and I type my name in, Brian, and click submit, it's going to say, hello, Brian. So how did that work? Here's the form. Form's action was slash submit. And so what happens when I go to when I submit this form is that it will take me to the slash submit route, passing in all of the data from inside the form, namely passing in this attribute called name, which I've named name, as data, as an argument to my HTTP request to my web server. And so inside of application.py now, here's that submit function. So what's going on? When I go to slash submit, line 18, this function called submit on line 19 is the one that gets called. And then on line 20, I say, OK, let's define a new variable called name, which is going to be equal to request.args.get, meaning take the HTTP request, the internet request that took me here, get the arguments, meaning that data from the form, and let's get the argument called name, which was from that form back in form.html. We're saving that in a variable called name. And then in the line immediately after that, we return render template, rendering index.html and passing in that name as the name of the person. That way, in that same page as before, where we say, like, hello, curly brace, person, that name is the one that gets filled in. So the end result of that is that I can go here, go back to this form, and I can say, I can type in Doug, press submit, and I get hello, Doug. Submit the form, and the result of the website is dependent upon whatever the user typed in and interacted with when they were writing when they were working on the website in the first place. What questions do we have about all of that? There was a lot there. Yeah.
Do the students have to know Python before this? Do you spend time?
We do. We spend some time. We have an entire assignment on Python before the problem set that requires them to really build a web application. And the goal there is we found kind of the easiest way to transition people over to Python or any new language, really, is to have them take problems that they've already solved in other languages and just translate them. So the first assignment that we do in Python is take two or three of the problems that we already solved, that you already solved in C, and just rewrite the same thing in Python. So really, they don't need to worry about the logic of the program anymore because they solved the problem already in C. And all they need to do is figure out how does the syntax translate from going from one language to the other. And that often offers a pretty easy way to show here are the parallels between the languages. And here's why, after I've written the program in C, it's really not all that hard to write the same program in Python. In fact, it's easier in some ways.
Even students who are new to programming and new, like coming into a 10th grade class and they're completely new to the course?
Yeah, especially if C was kind of the beginning point. Once you're, when you start in C and you see Python, Python simplifies a lot of the stuff from C, meaning that students will often have an easier time picking up Python having already learned C, and they can start to appreciate what's really happening in some of the simpler Python code. The opposite way, I imagine, would be slightly more difficult. If you start in Python and then try and learn C, it's much more challenging to figure out where all this additional complexity is coming from. But certainly, we found that you can pick up the transition fairly straightforward just by taking what you already know and figuring out what it looks like in a new language. And oftentimes, if you go to like the sample slides on cs50.harvard.edu, if you go to week 7, I think is the one. Let me make sure this is the right one. Oops, I'm 1 week ahead of it. Week 8. What we often show, this is also, oh, actually, maybe this is the right one. Yep, this is it. What we show is we take Python code, and we show, like, OK, here's what it looked like in C, and here's what it looks like in Python. We just show, like, right next to each other, here's C, here's Python, show how similar it is, show that, oh, well, in Python, you don't need a semicolon at the end of the line, but in C, you do, and just demonstrate the syntactic differences that way, so that if they're comfortable with one language, sure, it'll take some time to adjust to the syntax of a new language, but there's nothing conceptually difficult about making that transition. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, yeah, Flask is not really its own language. It's part of Python, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Christian, do you have stuff to add?
Correct me or expand on this analogy, but it's useful for me. So a way to explain Flask or web frameworks more generally is to think about if you were to build a house, a lot of people figured out that most houses need a roof and need doors, and you need to install pipes, and you're going to eventually need a kitchen. In web applications, people figured out that there's a lot of things that you're going to need when building a web application. Right. So Flask is a set of tools that when building a web application in Python allows you to build a lot of the features that a web application is going to have a lot easier than if you were to build it from scratch.
I like the word tool. I like the word that Christian used the word tool to describe it.
Yeah,
if we're going to continue with that house analogy, you can think of Flask as the equivalent of a tool for building a website in the same way that you would use tools for building a house, that if you had to build a house without using any tools, you could do it, but it's much more difficult and will take more time, but the tools make it faster. In the same way, you could build a Python web application that never used Flask at all, but by using a tool like Flask, it just becomes all the more easy, easier to pick up for someone who's less familiar. Oh, post requests, definitely. So HTTP requests can come in a bunch of different forms. Get and post are two of the most common. In Flask, all you would do is in the app.route, you would say methods equals. By default, we do get requests for all of the HTTP requests in Flask. But if you wanted to also support post requests, you would just do comma post. And now this route will also support post requests. So certainly something you can do. I won't do that for now, though, just for simplicity's sake. Other questions about anything that's happening? Yeah?
You don't have to specify the method in the HTML, or you would have to add that in the HTML, too, I guess?
In the HTML, I would do like action equals slash something, and then method equals post, yeah, in order to submit via post. Let's do one more quick example of something else that we could do. Oh, notice that this log file, when I go to slash, when I fill out this form and do like slash, what's the name I haven't done? Dan, for instance, and I click submit, and it says, hello, Dan. But in my log file, if I reopen it, Dan's not there. Why not? Let's go to the code. Let's figure it out. Why didn't Dan show up in my file? I filled out the form, typed Dan, pressed submit, but Dan didn't show up in the log file. What happened? A means append, yeah, append to the file, so that we don't lose the existing contents of the file. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So all this interaction with the file is happening inside of this hello function, which only happens when you go to slash name. But when I submit, I'm going to the slash submit form, which is still rendering index.html. Both of these functions render the same HTML file, but only this one interacts with the file. So that's interesting. If I wanted to fix that, well, certainly I could take this code and I could paste it and add it to submit. And now, when I go to the form, just go to slash, and I try and type in like slash Christian again and press submit. And I get hello, Christian. Now in my log file, yeah, Christian shows up. Here he is. But this is something that we might want to warn students against when thinking about like good design considerations. Usually, like the cardinal rule of design is that if you're ever copy and pasting the same code and putting it somewhere else, it's probably a better way to do it. And in this case, if I saw a student doing this, a good piece of advice might be, OK, if I'm writing the same function or the same code that's doing the same thing twice, great idea to just take it and put it into a function. So let's create another function called log, which takes as its argument a name. And this log function is just going to do this. It's going to open up my log file, write the name to it, and close it. And now instead of these three lines being repeated both in this function and in that function, I'll just say, OK, log the name and log the name. That way I get rid of this repeated code in this log function and just have a single line, meaning log the name. And this, in fact, is now easier to read. Before, I was having to deal with this like open log.txt a in all of this code for when I try and say hello to someone. That's probably unhelpful information. What I've done here is created an abstraction, this function called log, so that someone reading the code just says, OK, when we go to hello, we log the name, and then we display the template. And so I don't need to care how did I implement log. Did I open a file and append to it, or did I do something else? All I need to care about is I logged the name somehow, and then I returned by rendering the template. And so There's another easy example of abstractions that I can use, as well as design considerations of using functions to help simplify the process of writing this code. Another area for improvement. Is there any other area that you've seen me do so far today where I've done a lot of copying and pasting of code? Yeah, like these HTML documents. index.html looks like this. list.html looks like that. form.html looks like that. Like, if I open all three up, like there's a good amount of these files that isn't changing, right? Like the first six lines of index.html are the same as the first six lines of list.html, are the same as the first six lines of form.html. These are really very similar HTML files. And imagine if I wanted to change the title of my website. Instead of hello exclamation point, I realized that wasn't enthusiastic enough. I want two exclamation points. Now I'm going to need to go back into each one of my HTML files and like add an exclamation point to the title of each one. And that immediately should be another red flag as to, oh, here's an area where design could be improved. And so Flask allows you to do it. I'll do a quick demonstration of what that looks like. What I'm going to do in my templates folder is I'm going to create a new file. I'm going to call it layout.html. Meaning this is going to be the layout upon which all of my HTML files are based on. So what do all my HTML files have in common? OK, well, in index.html, this is a pretty good example. They're all going to have all of this stuff. And the only difference is kind of what's in here, this inside of the body stuff. That's the only thing different among all three of my HTML files. Everything else is the same. And so here, what I can do is I'm going to create a block. I'm going to create a block. I'll call it the body. It could be called anything. It doesn't have to be called body. But I'm going to create a block of code called body and say, OK, this is the layout for what all of my HTML files are going to look like. Inside of it's got HTML, head, title is hello. Inside of body, I create a block called body. And I'm going to fill stuff into that block in each of my HTML files. Because across each of my HTML files, what goes in that block is going to be slightly different. And so now watch how I can change my index.html file. All that really matters is that none of this stuff matters, because this is all stuff I had before. All that I really care about is that inside of my body block, I'm going to display this headline, this hello to the person. And I'm going to need to specify my index.html file. I want that to be based on, or I want it to extend the functionality of, layout.html. So this is my new HTML file. I first say, OK, extend layout.html, meaning take all that code from layout.html and use that. And now fill in the contents of that body block with this line of code there that just says hello. And this seems a little more complicated. And it seems like, why would I ever want to overcomplicate my code by adding this extending of the layout.html? But what it does is it lets me shorten all of the rest of my code. Because now this list.html file, well, all that really matters in this list file is these lines, the creation of this list. So I'll put that in block body and also extend layout.html. So now all that excess code goes away, because it's all just in my layout. And I can just fill in the body of list.html with the list that I care about. And same goes for form.html, that I don't really care about all this code, which is the same. I just care about these four lines. This is the form. This is all that's really important in form.html. So I'll put that in block body. This is all Jinja. Yep, all the curly brace percent sign, this is Jinja syntax. And so now, what was originally much longer files now is, here's index, it says hello. Here's list, it displays an unordered list of people and says hello to those people. And here's my form, it just displays that form. And the reason they can be this short is because they're all based on this original layout, which has all that HTML code that was common across all of my different files, except for that block body. And I can then fill into that block body whatever I want to. And so now if I run this again, I see that name Davy is not defined. Where did that come from? It probably did come from the log. I saved the file in again, and it worked. I think I'm just forgetting to save files today. And OK, so now this says hello. And if I go to like slash list, I see, encountered unknown tag extend. New error, list.html. Let's take a look at what's wrong. Oh, it extends. It's with an S. There's my problem. Culture of error, learning opportunities. I go to slash list. There's my list, and it says hello. But now the nice thing is if I want to change something that will change across all of my pages, all I have to do is go into layout and say, OK, actually, I want my background color to be blue for all of these. And I change that once in layout.html. And now for all of my pages, they've got a blue background. It looks ugly, but you can do it. All right, what questions do we have about that? This is called template inheritance in Jinja, the idea that you can have HTML files that are based on other HTML files and just add or extend functionality to that. Yeah? We can check the log. It just says Christian. But if I type Doug again and submit, Doug appears because I'm logging the name with that log function. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Because the whole file gets parsed through first, and then the functions get called.
What about the routes, though? Does the order matter? Because you went above the, I noticed you went above the string name.
Yep, just because this is going to kind of catch anything. If I put it at the top, it would likely catch everything, because all of them are routes. Yes, I put it underneath the
order of those.
I do believe so, yeah. We could experiment with that and try it, but I think it does. All right. That concludes this session, then. Definitely feel free to ask me more questions today or tomorrow if you have more questions about this. There are a lot of examples of Flask stuff on the CS50 website, on the Flask website itself as well. We'll take a short break, but then we'll dive right into CS50 tools.